Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We did have two cases set for argument this afternoon on the 130 docket, but the first case has settled, and so they will not be arguing, and you are the whole show until 3 o'clock. So I understand you're both ready, so Megan, if you'll call our only case for the 130 docket. Wait a minute. Let me introduce the panel. I forgot. I'm sorry. The panel today is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. We're so surprised that we only have one case that I just totally forgot to introduce your panel. So I apologize to the panel and to y'all. So now, Megan, let's give it a try.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Henderson to argue for appellant.
Okay, Richard, I've got a question. On what date did the state allege this injury to a child occurred?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Okay.
Wasn't expecting that question, so I'd have to go back and pull the record and look at the indictment, and since it was one of those paragraphs that was added on after a formal indictment by agreement and it was written in, I don't know if there's
presented in and to said court on said date in said state and county that the defendant did then and there intentionally or knowingly. I can't tell from this what date.
I would have to go back and look at it, Your Honor. I don't know if there's some other prose in the lead-in to the substantive paragraphs of ag sex assault of the child, indecency, et cetera, that alleges some date. I do not know that, Your Honor.
Well, it alleges two different dates. One case is January 15th, 2002, and first day of September 2007, and the other one is July 4th, 2008, and June 1st, 2006, and June 15th, 2006, and January 1st, 2003. So,
there may actually be a jurisdictional problem that nobody looked at.
I just am not sure.
Without pulling the record out, Your Honor, I wouldn't be able to answer your question.
All right. Well, that was my first question. So go ahead, Richard. Sorry to interrupt.
No problem. You didn't interrupt me. You just started. And I have no problem at all, Your Honor. That's probably a pertinent question we should have looked at first and foremost. As the court knows, this is an appeal from Criminal District Court Number 1. Two cases of a violation of deferred adjudication in which my client was found to have violated his two probations for injury to a child. The allegation that was alleged in both paragraphs was that he had prohibited contact with his daughters, the victims in the injury to a child cases. We do have two issues that we've cited for review, and I don't want the court to think that I'm bypassing the abuse of discretion. I think that that's something the court really should take a hard look at, because factually, to revoke a probation on what I think everyone conceded was a casual encounter by my client's daughters at a place that they all go to church and someone took a picture, I'm just not really sure if that isn't an abuse of discretion.
I mean, what about all the phone calls?
That was not part of the allegation. The allegation and what they focused on was at the hearing was this photograph. And apparently there had been some domestic squabble between either another putative wife or a girlfriend. And after the jealous wife became angry with the husband, she took the photograph to the probation department, and that's what precipitated the filing. I know there's a lot of family dynamics and things that go on in these types of cases. And obviously, to the court, it started off as an allegation of sexual assault to a child, though it was later reduced to injury to a child. But I think to think that families are not going to run into each other and have casual encounters, contact, is beyond what I would call common sense. But I would ask the court to look at that issue as well as our issue about what I'm calling stacking. There's sometimes it's called consecutive sentences, cumulative sentences, but it's easier for me to say stacking. At the conclusion of the testimony.
Let's get back to the petition to proceed to adjudication. What about the fact that it was pled on or about? I mean, do they have to elect specific events, or does on or about include the phone calls?
I don't know, Your Honor. I'm not, as I said in my argument, I'm not even sure if you use the on or about, you've got contact where they come to visit him in the jail. And
right.
If he comes out and has the visit, is that contact? Is that prohibited contact? But that's the core issue. And there was evidence of other contact in the hearing. There was evidence of other contact. So, and some of the hearing, you have to look at the evidence, is actually one is a hearing to see if there's a violation of the probation, and then it appears that they go into what's called a punishment hearing, where they talk about what apparently really happened between my client and his daughters. But the stacking.
If this were a trial, you know, original trial of a case, you could require the state to elect. If a defendant requests the state be required to elect, is there any requirement that the state elect?
I don't know. I've never had that issue in a probation revocation. I know that that is correct in a trial.
Should it be an issue in a probation revocation?
I don't know. I mean, it was, things kind of seemed to unfold at this particular hearing, if you look back at the record, short as it is. The focus originally was upon the contact at the Buddhist temple, but then it apparently, as other witnesses took the stand, talked about other contact, and I think a probation officer claiming that my client had made an admission that he had visited with the daughters on a regular basis because they were his daughters.
I mean, that's nothing in the record that indicates the defendant's attorney asked if the state is required to elect.
There's nothing there.
So really the other contact really is just for punishment and also to show that this was more than just a casual meeting. It was a systematic series of contacts between the defendant and his daughters.
I think that's correct. Again, I still think it maybe belies common sense to think that regardless of what's gone on before, that they would not have some contact as a father and with his daughter. The stacking issue, I think, is what's really sticky in some ways in this case. 303 of the Texas Code of Penal Code allows for stacking if it is out of the same criminal episode and it's a crime of a sexual nature involving children under 17. As I began preparing for the argument, I had to step back and think for a moment. Our two different daughters, where it's alleged injury to a child, is there anything in the record to indicate that this all came out of the same criminal episode to begin with? If it is, and I don't concede that it is, I think the state concedes that injury to a child is not a listed stackable offense in Texas Penal Code 303B2B. Their novel argument is that because the original charge was a stackable offense, then what is later pled to, tried, and convicted can be something different than one of those charges and therefore become stackable. They've cited the Sykes case, which is an unpublished memo opinion out of Austin, and while I think I'm headed down the slippery slopes to talk about unpublished opinion, Sykes was an unusual situation where the man was charged with 5 years on an indecency case and an attempted indecency case. So he took 5 years in the pen, which was to be followed by a 10-year probation, hence the stacking. He served the five, started serving probation, and then violated. He was charged with an indecency count and with an attempt. And the state has used this case, or at least cited this case, as the reason for saying if the original charge is for a stackable offense, if they plead it down to an attempt, then the attempt is okay. I've since found another case called Parfait versus State, which I did not cite in my brief, and I would ask leave to cite to send that as a letter brief.
Well, that's what Sykes relies on.
123rd 348. But Parfait was convicted of indecency by exposure and attempted sexual assault of a child. The Court of Criminal Appeals said that this was not stackable because a plain reading of the statute says an attempt is not a stackable charge. I think the same rule applies here. Injury to a child is not a stackable charge, even if your original charge is some type of sexual offense involving a child under 17. By that logic, if you could charge somebody with sexual assault of a child under 17, a stackable offense, and then add a burglary or a theft count, and you plead them out to the theft count, those counts become stackable because the original charge was sexual assault of a child. And that reasoning, I think, frankly, is absurd. I mean, the offenses that he actually took the deferred adjudication for and for which he was convicted are injury to a child. And those charges, under any reading of the stacking statutes 42.8 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure or 303, are simply not stackable offenses. Frankly, I thought we might get a confession of error and maybe even a nunc pro tunc on this issue, because I think this issue is very, very clear that these are not stackable offenses and that this judgment needs to be reformed. And to the extent that Sykes quoted Parfait, I think Sykes is incorrect.
Do you have any cases to support your position? Because all your cases only dealt with void judgments where there was improper stacking. It didn't deal with this portion of 303 or the argument of the stacking.
Well, Parfait, I think, is directly on it. But I don't think there is a... think so.
So that's the difference between this and Parfait, is it not?
Well, except Parfait was an attempt indecency, and they said attempt in the under 1501 of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure, attempted offenses were not enumerated.
I understand, but they're still relying upon the argument that that was the originally charged offense, not what he pled down to. So there's a difference.
There may be a distinction. I mean, if he had been charged with two counts of indecency and went on probation for an attempt, then it would be analogous.
But Sykes, in Sykes, there was a plea bargain agreement to stack.
Correct.
And Judge Onion emphasized the fact that the stacking occurred when he was first placed on probation and sent to the penitentiary.
I agree with that.
And that he benefited by his agreement to stack, and because he didn't object at the time, it's too late for him to come back in now and complain about the stacking. Then they throw in something about, well, and the charged offense, it says, well, if it was a charged offense. But at the end of Sykes, he says it's fundamentally unfair for him to benefit from this plea bargain agreement where he agreed to the stacking, and we're not going to discuss invited error, but he did agree to the stacking. He benefited from it. And that was when he should have objected, and now it's too late. Wasn't that really what
That's what Judge Onion is saying, and I think it probably was a void stacking order at the start. I mean, they may have plea bargained to it. They didn't reach that question. But I think it was a voidable stacking order from the beginning. It was an illegal sentence at that time that they had no power to impose because attempt was not an enumerated offense under 303. Wherefore,
so that's the case. None of these cases are really our fact situation.
I think to a certain extent, Parfait certainly is because it does enumerate a non-stackable offense. If we're going to try to distinguish it that we charge something originally and we plead to something else and therefore that makes it stackable, I don't think there is any case law to that effect because I don't think that can be the law. Thank you, Your Honors.
Any other questions?
May it please the court. My name is Helena Faulkner, and I represent the state in this appeal.
Okay, Helena, what date did all this occur on? Or is it alleged to have occurred on? I can't figure it out.
I honestly don't know the answer to the question that you had earlier asked Mr. Henderson. I'd be happy to look at it. Normally, the date alleged or is the date that's at the top. I mean, when you allege more than one count, it refers back, if necessary, to the date. But I do understand.
Has a different date, and this just
I understand
on
that.
Date. So do we
and I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Okay, so we just maybe, do we assume that since all the alleged dates, even though they were on or about, allege some date within the statute of limitations, do we assume that said date means a date within the statute of limitations, or do we not?
Well, I would say yes. We do assume that if the dates alleged for the original contact alleged with those dates occurred, the injury to a child was part of a plea bargain offense for the offenses previously alleged in the indictment. And if those are within the statute of limitations, then my argument would be that.
Well, it's not a lesser included. Injury to a child isn't a lesser included.
Right, but I would say that because it does reference said date, that it references a date within the statute of limitations when one of the offenses previously charged was alleged to have occurred. That's off the top of my head, to be honest. I don't know the answer since it wasn't raised, and I didn't consider it. To be honest about it, I'm just trying to, off the top of my head, I think that if, because these were part of a plea bargain, the state's alleging these other offenses and that they occurred on, you know, this criminal episode occurred on these dates, that by referring, you know, the language said date refers back to one of those dates or a date within the statute of limitations. I do want to just quickly state that the state, I don't think, has ever conceded that this was a casual encounter. This is just touching real briefly on the second point of error, the probation revocation. In fact, there was testimony at the revocation hearing that in a phone call, appellant told the girl's mother that they could go to church together on October 11th, 2009, but that they needed to take separate cars. So I don't think that the state has ever conceded that this was just a casual encounter where, you know, the father and his victim showed up at the same place and were in the same room together and that his probation was violated for that. We have the photograph, the whole family, including the victims and the appellant, in a photograph together. That's certainly more than just casual contact. That they showed up at the temple.
The mother knew the allegations concerning what was the father was supposed to be doing to the daughters. The mother drove the daughters to see the father. Presumably, the mother also facilitated the telephone conversations The mother drove the girls to the jail to visit him. Does the record reflect whether CPS was ever contacted? Because, I mean,
no, and I can't remember the exact ages of these daughters, but I believe one was maybe 15 and one is 17 or 18 at the time of trial. The conduct that was charged occurred over a period of time, but, and I'm not saying that to excuse that there was any contact or that anyone facilitated any contact between the girls, but they were teenage girls. I don't know whether CPS was.
They were teenage girls when the contact that caused the revocation occurred, and the mother was the one that drove them there. Mm-hmm. And the mother's the one that drove them to jail where more contact occurred.
Right.
And the record doesn't reflect that CPS was ever contacted?
Not to my knowledge.
To remove the girls from that mother?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Moving on to the consecutive sentencing, if the court doesn't have any other questions about the point of error two on the revocation, if these offenses were not part of the same criminal episode, then the state's position is that 3.03 never even comes into play, and that Article 42.08 of the Code of Criminal Procedure allows the trial court discretion whether to have sentences run consecutively or concurrently. I argued the case under 3.03 in replying to the point of error raised.
Is there a conflict between 4208 and 3.03?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
It seems to limit what can be stacked. I mean, very definitely limits what can be stacked.
Right.
And then 4208 says, it's within the discretion of the judge.
Well, I think one is just a generally confers power or discretion on the trial court to stack sentences. Just in general, the court can stack or not stack sentences when there's more than one conviction. And then 3.03 is a very specific instance of when the power to stack is limited, and that's when the offenses arise from the same criminal episode and when those offenses are tried in the same criminal proceeding. So my argument about 42.08, I don't think they're inconsistent at all. I think, you know, our statutes are full of general grants of power and then other provisions that limit those powers in certain circumstances. My argument was simply that if this is not the same criminal episode, and I think that in the brief and in argument, Mr. Henderson might be saying that he doesn't see evidence that these were the same criminal episode.
As what?
Then,
the two children.
Right.
Same criminal episode.
Right. So if it's not the same criminal episode, 3.03 never comes into play. The limitation on the discretion to stack or to render sentences, you know, concurrent sentences, never comes into play. And so then it would be the state's position that 42.08 would allow the court discretion to stack or not stack the sentences. The only way 3.03 even comes into issue is if it's the same criminal episode. And if we do have the same criminal episode, then Section 3.03b2b provides an exception to 3.03a, which states that if certain circumstances exist, then the sentences must be concurrent unless or except as provided in subsection B. It's our position that subsection B does provide the authority for the court in this case to stack the sentences. And I cited
But when the state abandons allegations, then I've got a problem with due process. When you punish somebody for an offense for which they were either acquitted or never prosecuted. And that seems to be what you're arguing, that even though the state abandoned those allegations, he should still be punished for those allegations that were abandoned by the stacking.
Well, and subsection B2 does talk about an offense for which a plea agreement was reached, and it's my understanding that the injury to a child allegations came into play as part of the plea bargaining in this case.
Where is that in the record?
I believe that there are plea documents in the record, in the clerk's record.
Just said I'm guilty of the only surviving count, which was one that was handwritten in. And, I mean, that can happen because the witnesses refuse to testify, because it suddenly turns out that the state didn't have the evidence they thought they had. Where in the record does it say that the reason the state abandoned the indecency and the assault, sexual assault counts was because it was plea bargained to abandon them? I mean, I don't see that.
Well, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if the record specifically reflects that the injury to a child was added to the allegations as part of the plea agreement. I would have to look again at the record. I don't know if you're going to find something that leads from point A to point B expressly in the record.
Because in the that unpublished case Joel were talking about, it clearly was part of the plea bargain, the way it was handled, the stacking. But I haven't found anything in the record. Of course, like I say, it's a real thin record.
Mm-hmm.
Here. We've got some more record here. But, I mean, that's it. There's no record of the original plea except for what's in the clerk's record that shows why the state abandoned those other counts and went on the injury to a child.
And that, I would have to look at the record again, and I'd be happy to,
yeah, I just don't,
look at it.
All we have is a record of revocation because there's no reporter's record of,
right,
of the plea.
And I would have to look at the plea papers again. But like I said, I don't know if you're going to find anything that says that the reason, the exact reasoning of the state. Like you said, we don't have a record of the original plea proceedings. All we have are the papers that are in the clerk's record. But, even if one of the circumstances that you mentioned, if someone wasn't going to show up at that time to testify or something else, I think that wouldn't negate that there's a plea agreement between the parties that, we will charge you with injury to a child and you will plead guilty to injury to a child, and in exchange,
no, we'll go ahead and
you'll get
you
deferred adjudication.
We'll punish you for what we never prosecuted you for. That's where I've got the problem.
And I would argue that he's not being punished for what he was never prosecuted for. He's subject to, his conviction is for injury to a child. Whatever punishment range would be for injury to a child, that's what he would be subjected to. And the fact that the sentences have been stacked, I wouldn't say that he's being punished for what we abandoned or for the original charges, even though he wasn't convicted for them. Off the top of my head, I mean, something like a deadly weapon finding or things like that might increase the punishment. And I know there you have a jury finding or a court finding of deadly weapon use. When you use enhancing punishment with prior convictions, that enhances your level of punishment. You're not being punished twice for this offense.
If the state abandons the allegation of a deadly weapon, can the court then, on its own, impose a finding of deadly weapon? No.
No, what I'm saying is, as far as just, and it's probably a better analogy to use a prior conviction alleged to enhance a punishment. The cases say you're not being punished. It's not double jeopardy. You're not being punished twice for that prior offense just because it's being used to enhance the punishment for a current offense.
But if the state abandons it, then it can't be used to enhance either. I'm just having a problem following this.
I've only got the record in one of the two cases in front of me, but two things that I do, and I've just now seen these, two things that I do see is, at least in this case, on the order of deferred adjudication, it says the date of the offense is July 4, 2008. I don't know if that clears up that indictment said date thing, but it picks a date and it puts it in the order.
Well, if it's not the same criminal episode, then 3.03 doesn't even come into play.
You got a lot of issues here that weren't.
Anything else you want to tell us?
No, Your Honor. If the court doesn't have any more questions, then the state would pray that the court affirm the trial court's judgments.
Your Honor, in rebuttal, Texas Code of Criminal Procedure 4208A states that if the same defendant is convicted in two or more cases, judgment and sentence shall be pronounced in each case in the same manner as if there had been one conviction. There are some exceptions in 4208A. I didn't cite all of them in my brief, but none of the exceptions appear to apply. These cases were tried at the same time. That's why we try cases often at the same time, so that we can get one punishment and they can't be stacked. 303 was created so that we could try cases involving children under the age of 17 to provide some exceptions to those stacking rules. First and foremost, it has to be from the same criminal episode. And second, it has to be a stackable offense. As we've said before, we think neither one of these cases are not stackable offenses, and that 4208A specifically states, and that's what I'm saying in rebuttal, that the judgment and sentence shall be pronounced in each case as if there had been one conviction. The court seems to be familiar with Parfait, and if you are familiar with it, then there wouldn't be any need for me to send a letter brief. Do you still want the letter brief?
We can look at Parfait.
Okay. If you have any other questions, unless you have any other questions, I'm concluding my argument. We pray that you reverse it on both grounds and at least undo the stacking.
Okay, we appreciate your argument. There are just a lot of questions about the law in this case and the facts. So your argument has been very helpful to us, and we appreciate it. The case is submitted, and you're released to go about your business, and we're going to be in recess then until 3 o'clock.
All rise.